Okay, it's 8:30, Erev Tov. I want to welcome Rabbanit Leah Sarna as she makes her inaugural teaching experience at Torah Motion. So a pleasure to have you. Leah Sarna is the Associate Director of Education and Director of High School Program at Drisha. She previously worked at Anshe Sholem B'nai Israel Congregation in Chicago, where I had the pleasure, I was there once with Rabbi Asher Lopatin, and those days, that's when I was now, of course, the Walkenfields. I'm actually going to be doing with Sarah Walkenfield the Siyum HaPsachim on Monday. She asked me, we finished, Psachim, and Safaria is going to be doing the Siyum. I'm not supposed to say this during the introduction to you, but anyway, so.
I'm making mine on Thursday, but okay. I'm speaking at the Hadron Siyum on Sunday.
Okay. Oh, at the Hadron Siyum. Very nice. Very nice. Okay. Leah is a graduate of Yeshivat Maharat of Yale University. She's a writer, a teacher, and it's really a pleasure to welcome Rabbanit Sarna. Vakasha.
Thanks so much for having me. So as you all know, this week's Parsha is Parsha Vayikra, and we get, we've done some Korbanot already. I know sometimes people say like, oh, Parsha Vayikra, the beginning of Korbanot, but we saw a bunch of Korbanot already in some of the building of the Mishkan Parshiot. But here we get really into kind of the nitty gritty details. And what's great about the nitty gritty details is that we get to do some real, we get to kind of judge ourselves by the metric of how much do we aspire to redemption. And that's a big theme, obviously, in Pesach also. It's one of the questions, says the Talmud, will be asked at the end of days. Did you look forward to the redemption? Did you anticipate the redemption? People who have, we were just talking about Gemara Pesachim, and if you read your way through the Gemara, you realize so much of it is about Korbanot. And I think a lot of people find that to be in Daf Yomi like a really hard part. But what I love about it is that you get to imagine these rabbis sitting around in Babel. They don't make Daf destroy it. Whatever, 200 years ago, 500 years ago. And they're sitting there remembering every detail of how to bring these korbanot, because in case the Beit HaMikdash is, in case the temple is rebuilt tomorrow, we have to be ready. We have to know what to do. It has to be available to us. This knowledge has to be preserved. And I think that's something that the beginning of Sefer Vayikra really opens up for us and pushes us towards this feeling of like, yes, we have to figure out how to keep this wisdom, this ancient knowledge of these sacrifices alive. And we have to figure out even how to make it relevant in our own lives today. So that's what we'll be talking about tonight. We'll be talking about sacrificing on the dining room table. And kind of where does sacrificing sort of live on in our lives today? So there's a source sheet that was available, I think, on the website and other places. Let me know. Bigger, so we can all read it together on here too. So here we have we're in the second paragraph of Vayikra, and we are talking about meal offerings, grain offerings, the korban, mincha, so when a person who brings a korban mincha to Hashem, they should bring it out of solet ya korbano, which is, fancy flour, the atakal yashamed venatan alea lemunas. We should put oil on it and incense on it, and then you should bring it to Aaron, the Kohanim, the Kamat Misha Melo Kutso. He should scoop a handful out of it, from the grain and the oils and on the frankincense, and then the Kohen will bring that as an offering on the Mizbeach, Yisharech Nichoach LaHashem. An offering by fire, and it gives off, it's Reach Nichoach, you just put incense on it, gives off a nice smell to God. And then the leftovers, go Aaron and his sons can eat it. It is Kodesh Kadashim, it's like the most holy type of offering of the offerings by fire. So anyways, it goes on with like some details here about how to bring it. You can read that in your own time, but here's one detail of it that I want to kind of stress for us. So, v'kol korban nimchacha v'melach timloch season every offering with salt. Lo tashpi melach, do not omit salt. Brit alokacha me'al minchatacha, do not omit salt, which is the covenant of God, from your offering. Al kol korban mechat takriv melach, on all of your offerings, you must offer salt. Okay, so we just said kind of the same thing at least three times, right? Put salt on all your things. Don't leave the salt off of it. On all your things, put on salt. So what's going on here? Why the super hyper repetition? And also, what is this brit elokecha? What is the covenant of God that is maybe through salt? So we're going to be diving into this salt thing. Also, because we never, I don't know, like if I asked you to like tell me all the things that go into a korban mincha, I think you would have said like grain, oil, maybe you would have remembered the incense, but like, would you have remembered the salt? Like maybe not. And yet, for those of you who have been using this pandemic time to make bread, you know that bread without salt is more or less disgusting. So it does make sense to add salt to your korban. And really that's what like Ibn Ezra here says, like, yeah, why do you need salt? You need salt as a, what is the brit of salt, says Ibn Ezra. I didn't bring this inside for you, but that Ibn Ezra says the brit of salt is that you should not, like, you need to bring sacrifices to God that are delicious. Like, sacrifices to God, they can't be, right? Like, that's like the Cain and Hevel thing, right? Like, are you the Cain and Abel thing? Like, are you bringing, like, the best of your crop to God? Like, that's what it's meant to be. That's the covenant through which we bring sacrifices, that it's actually the best, the most delicious. Don't bring something disgusting that's going to then disgrace the whole process of the temple and of the altar. No, like bring the best of the best. And what's the best? The best comes with salt, obviously. No. So that's what Ibn Ezra here says. There's a lot of different ideas actually about what this brit of salt is, and we'll see some of them inside, but Rashi says that, based on the Midrash, Rashi says that actually, like, God made a covenant with the waters below, and the Da'at Zakenim says salt has this other element to it, which is, we don't think about it so much, so I guess people who pickle at home think about it, but for a long time, salt was the primary preservative that everyone used. So salt not only has this element of making things delicious, or it reminds us of the ocean, right? That's where Rashi's going with it. But it also is preservative. And you know, in ancient times, like they would not forget that salt was preservative. And you know, like we know this from pickles and things like that. And the Da'at Zakenim says, yeah, like that's what it's about here. It's actually about the korbanot, and like the promise of korbanot, which is that we'll be able to kind of always be able to atone for our sins and achieve repentance and improve ourselves. That's where the Da'at Zakenim goes with this. That agreement and that possibility actually needs to be preserved. And that's what the salt does. It's a very beautiful Da'at Zakenim. Anyways, all of that for another time. But I actually want to dig into how the salt looks for a second. Like, what do we actually do with it? So here's the Rambam. The Rambam wrote a code called the Mishnah. Maimonides wrote a code called the Mishnah Torah. And he has one section of it that's called Hilchot Yisurei Mizbeach, things that are forbidden on the altar. And a really fun thing about the Rambam is, like, other people also wrote codes. So let's say, like, the Torah, the Shulchan Aruch, they wrote codes and they left out this stuff. Like, if you look in the Torah Shulchan Aruch for how did they use salt in the Korban Mincha, in the grain offerings and the meal offerings, like you will not find the answer in the Shulchan Aruch, because the Shulchan Aruch like left this stuff out, right? So when we want to know, we have to go back to a different code, which is the Rambam. So the Rambam says mitzvah aseh limloch kol hakorbanot. So the Rambam's also going to make sense of some of that repetition. He says it is a positive commandment to salt all the sacrifices kodem she'alu lamizbeach, before they go up onto the altar. Shenamar, al kol korbanecha takriv melach, on all of your sacrifices you shall offer salt. So, right, so we are in the context here of meal offerings, And it seems like it's just like, yeah, like bread is bad without salt. You have to salt your bread. No, it's actually one of the things the Ramban says is this last piece, this third reiteration, what this adds in is that it's not just the meal offerings. It's actually all the offerings. It's actually everything that goes on to the Mizbeach, everything that goes up onto the altar, right? As it says, the kol korban ha'tefillah. There is nothing that goes up onto the altar without salt, other than wine libations, blood, and wood. So what's funny is, he says, this thing is an oral tradition, there's no explicit verse to rely on, which is, this is really the Rambam at his finest, right? He just quoted a verse, and then he says there's no verse on which to rely this on. So you could say this part that he says there's nothing on which this relies on could be about the exceptions. That's definitely one way to read the Rambam, that the Devar Zeh Kabbalah, the part of this that is only oral tradition, is that list of libations, blood, and wood as exceptions to the salt rule, and that actually the salt rule is in it. Or you could say, this is my, like, the Rambam is being aware that, like, there's something strange in the Pasuk. Here is his personal read, but that's not necessarily, like, how one needs to read this Pasuk. And so he's kind of being, I don't know, like, humbled at it or something. And then he says, okay, how do you do it? The mitzvah, limlocha basar yafeh yafeh, really, like, put a lot of salt on that meat. The way you would salt meat before roasting it, that you turn over the limb and you're really like salting the whole thing of it. If you ever watch, like, you know, some of these like famous chefs apply salt, like I feel like Samin Nosrat's like big thing that she's always pushing is like, don't be afraid of salt, use way, you know, people are taught like salt is bad for you, whatever, like, no, go all in with the salt. I think that's really the Rambam here saying the same thing. You know, cover it, be generous with your salt. However, that's like mitzvah, that's like a really good thing to do. But even if you just put a little bit of salt on, that's acceptable. Okay. But if you brought your sacrifice, right, he created below melach fal loka, but if you offer sacrifice without any salt at all, then you get lashes. And here he brings, so we saw there's three iterations in the verse of salting. And this is, so that was just number three. And now we're on to number two. Velo tashbit melach brito kacha. You shall not withhold salt, the covenant of your God. So he says, this is about the punishment. That if you withhold salt, then you get lashes. But alfa pisha loka ha korban kasher vet hurza. So weirdly enough, you did something wrong by bringing a sacrifice without salt. But even though you get lashes for it, the sacrifice still works, which is very interesting. That's usually if you like mess up your sacrifice at all, the sacrifice or a portion of the sacrifice doesn't work. And it's very easy to mess up a sacrifice, right? So like if you learn the Mishnayot about this stuff, like particularly maybe like some of the most memorable ones are like Kinim, right? When you're bringing bird sacrifices, and if you have like the wrong intention vis-a-vis what, like these two identical birds, you can get into so much trouble and maybe you have to throw one out or whatever, or like bring an extra one. So but here it says, yeah, even though you actually were missing like actually a part of the sacrifice by not putting any salt on it, it still worked, which tells you that there's something very weird going on with the salt. Okay, and then he says, well, the one exception to this is chutz min ha-mincha she-ha-melach ma'akev be-kmitza she-namar v'lo tashbit melach brit elokacha me'al mincha kacha. So this is that we're still in iteration number two here, but now it's the full part of it. So it says, the meal offerings there, the meal offering did not work if you left out salt. the meal is a necessity for the like fistful of the offering, right? So remember, you're making like a mush out of your meal and your grain, your oil, and your incense, and then the Kohen takes a handful of it, and that's the sacrifice, and that handful amount is the sacrifice, and the rest Aaron and his sons get to eat, or whatever the priest gets to eat. So so you need to have, right, he says that melech ma'akev b'kamitza, the salt needs to be actually part of the sacrificial like handful, the sacrificial handful that then goes on to the mizbeach, and that's a really, I mean, that's a really good read, because obviously where the salt part comes in is in the in the section of Vayikra that's talking about salt. So that makes a lot of sense. And then there's another just a beautiful thing here that he brings in, which is, where does the salt come from? So meaning, if I come to the Bina Mikdash and I'm bringing a grain offering, am I bringing my own salt with? And he says, no. The salt which is used to salt the sacrifices is communal property. It's actually like something that the whole community contributes to each and every korban. And the individual actually doesn't bring salt or wood for his own korban from his house. So there's a communal element to every sacrifice brought in the temple, which is the salt and the wood. And then he tells you about the three places where they would leave salt, which this I love, just because salt really is one of those things that you kind of wish, like, you know, like we all kind of do it in our own homes. Like you have your kitchen salt, and then you have your salt in the shaker on your table, and then maybe you have another one on your challah board. And we're gonna get to your like special Shabbos salt in a second, but soon we're gonna get to your special Shabbos salt. But this idea that like, oh, like they would have salt in multiple places in the Beit HaMikdash, like it just really resonated with me in terms of like thinking about all the different places. And then like soon I'll take out my special like non-iodized Pesach salt, and I'll have my like Pesach salt. This idea that you like leave your different salts in different places, and you might even have your fancy like, you know, big grain salt, whatever, all different salts. Okay. And right, so they would leave it in three different places. Belishkat HaMelach, so they would have the chamber of salt. That was like the primary storage place for the salt. I'll go back, and then on the ramp that was going up to the altar, and then also again on the top of the altar, Rosh HaShavibah. And they would like do different things in each of these places. So in the Lishkat HaMelech, that's where they would salt the hides. And then on the ramp, that's where they would salt the limbs. And on top of the Mizbeach, that's where they were doing the Mincha offering. So that, and that, right, Rosh Hashanah, Molchi, Nakomet, Balvonah, Menachoda, Nisrafot, Ve'olat Ha'us. And that, so that's all, right, at the top of the altar, that's where they were doing the fistful and the frankincense, and the meal offerings were burnt up there, and birds also are brought as burnt offerings are salted first, in addition. So even something where, like, literally, like, even an Ola, where you're literally, like, taking the whole animal and just burning the whole animal and no one's eating any of it, even those are salted, which is interesting then, because it means that the salt is really not about the human consumption, right? Every example we've talked about so far has been, well, people are also eating part of it and people think salt is delicious. But here the Rambam points out at the end, even sacrifices where the whole thing's being burned, those also get the salt. And I think that is really just like evidence to Ibn Ezra's point about how like the korban needs to be delicious, even if you're not eating from it, or maybe especially if you're not eating from it, the korban, the sacrifice that you're bringing to God needs to be delicious, because like that's what makes a good sacrifice. It should be delicious. Okay, so Adkan, here we're done now with kind of the like how it works, and we're gonna look now at just this great Gemara in Masachet Brachot about what is like the covenant of salt, or like it'll give us a hint about what the covenant of salt is. So we have Rabbi Shimon, we're in Bracha 5a, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish says, the Rabbi Shimon Lakish, Ne'amar Brit b'melach, the Ne'amar Brit b'yisurim. The word covenant is used with regard to salt, the word covenant is used with regard to suffering. Ne'amar Brit b'melach, it says covenant by salt, as it says in our verse, lo tashbit melech brit, right? Don't the salt of covenant should not be excluded. The namar brit be sri, and then it says the language of covenant by suffering, as it says, Eladivrei Habrit, as it says in Deuteronomy, these are the words of the covenant. Ma Brit Hamur B'Melach, Melach Mamteket Habasar, what is the covenant mentioned with regard to salt? It's that salt sweetens the meat and makes it edible. Af Brit Hamur B'Yisruin, so too the covenant that is mentioned with regard to suffering, or specifically like punishment that God would bring onto Israel. Yisruin mimarkin kol avodotav shel adam. So suffering cleanses a person's transgression. So here, what's amazing is all of our other kind of commentators that I brought, that I just said outside, I talked about Rashi and Ibn Ezra and Datsukinim, they're all talking about what is the role that salt plays in sacrifice. What is the covenantal role that salt plays in sacrifice? And here Rish Lakish is saying it's not a covenantal role between like God, Israel, and sacrifices. It's literally like the covenant that's just inherent to the salt. Like salt just has this sort of covenant inherent to it that it makes meat sweet. Also, there's people who, like, by the way, who put salt on watermelon because there's something starts out a little bit sweet and then you add salt to it, it becomes sweeter. It like brings out the sweetness in something. So we sometimes think about salt as like something you would use specifically for savory, but like that's not necessarily true. But what's amazing about as I said, what's amazing about what Reish Lakish is doing is that it's not actually about like the sacrifice at all. It's about there's something special about salt. That's the brit. That's the covenant. It's just salt has this like magical capability with food, with meat, and it just makes it better. And it makes something edible, and it makes something delicious. And so too suffering, like it can take a sinful person, and suffering can make a sinful person like more delicious, or something like that. Which is actually like if you try and sort of line up like what is salt doing versus what is suffering doing in this vision that put forward by Reish Lakish, it's actually a little bit complicated. Like it's hard to even articulate like this like transformative capability maybe. Or something full of potential. It's hard to kind of exactly put your finger on what's the similarity between that Reish Lakish is driving at between salt and suffering. But what I do like about it a lot is that we often think of the primary purpose of the Beit HaMikdash to be this ability to transform, of all of these temple rituals, to be the ability to transform humans, right? This ability to say, yes, I did something wrong and now I can change, or something happened in my life and I can mark it, or something like all things like that. But the primary promise is this promise of kapara, of atonement. And so just as suffering, you know, like as suffering carries this atoning possibility that it is mimarik kol vonotahav shel adam, that it cleanses a person's transgressions, you almost wonder whether what he's really missing here is not just that like salt does something really cool to meat, it like transforms meat, but actually that salted meat brought on the altar also has the ability to transform our afflictions. And that actually what really is similar is that if you're a person who's carrying a sin around, maybe there's like multiple ways of dealing with it. And one way would be to bring a sin offering in the temple with salted meat. And another way would be to suffer. And that suffering causes that. And obviously I'll just like caveat this whole conversation with like, this is only one of the Talmud's many and diverse teachings about the benefits or lack thereof of suffering. We could come back together and learn a lot of different and contradictory and conflicting sources in the Bavli about suffering. But just, you know, while I mention it, I feel like it's important to yes mention that even, you know, Rabbi Judah the Prince, who was the codifier of the Mishnah, he starts out by saying, yeah, suffering is so important, potentially for exactly this kind of reason, because it has this like transformative ability. And then, you know, like a few years later within like one little story. He sort of says, you know, suffering, not so good. He retracts it. So just to, you know, I'm always like hesitant to just bring in one perspective from the Bible on suffering. So I know it can feel really personal to people who are listening. But anyway, so just to go back to like the salt piece of it, I think I would just argue that part of what Rish Lakish is driving at here is that the covenant of salt, it seems like, I've said a lot of things about this so far, so I want to kind of condense it together, but it seems like Rish Lakish is saying it's not about like the salt in the sacrifice and there's some agreement that we have with salt that it will do this thing, but actually like all salt carries a covenant that it will have this transformative capability to it. That was the first thing I just wanted to point out about this Gemara that I think is really interesting. And the second thing I wanted to point out about it was that that the juxtaposition between salt and suffering as two different ways of dealing with, potentially dealing with sin. And then what does salt kind of, salt then almost takes the role of suffering in the version of dealing with sin that is achieving atonement via sacrifice, as opposed to in a world without sacrifice, or someone who chooses not to go that route, I suppose, in a time when sacrifice is an option, then suffering is the route instead. So salt and suffering are potentially kind of on two different but equally effective paths towards cleansing a person from their transgressions. And here's the Sefer HaKhenech who's going to offer maybe a different but sort of similar idea about what's going on with the salt here. So the Sefer HaKhenech is always a great way to look, a great place to look if you're interested in like what is the kind of source of a mitzvah. So he says, Mishorshei mitzvah ha-korban, lachshir u-heyashir nefesh ha-makriv. So similarly to what we were just saying, the roots of the commandment of the sacrifice are to straighten out the soul of the person who's bringing it. And in order to kind of wake up the soul of the person who's bringing it, in order to wake up the soul of the person who's bringing the sacrifice, he has to bring things that are good and sweet and delightful to him. And that's the kind of school like take on sacrifice in general. And he says, so the salt has really a very similar kind of element to this. She says the salt is part of the same process that you have to really be, the whole point of bringing a sacrifice is that it has to awaken something inside of you. And if you don't, like the salt is that last step that just as like if you were eating some dish and it was undersalted, it's not delicious. It doesn't even smell delicious. So too, like the sacrifice, it just has to be something that you would want, something that's delicious, something that you love that you're then giving up and bringing in as part of your sacrifice. And the salt is a really essential piece of that. And then he says, in addition to that, we talked about salt as having a preservative capability. He says, in addition to that, Yish b'melech inyan acher romiz, ki ha-melech mekim kol davar u-matzia al hefsid ve-herkavon. Salt preserves things and it saves things from loss and rot. V'chim b'maaseh korban yinatzel adam mina hefsid. So here he's really tying together, again, those two kind of strands in Rish Lakish's statement. That similarly, sacrifice saves the person from loss, the tishmor nafsho, the tishar kayamet la'ad, and it will preserve his soul so that his soul won't be like rotting from sin, and his soul will then live on in existence forever because the sacrifice cleanses the soul from sin, which is then, again, like where I think Rish Lakish was really driving with his comparison between salt and suffering. That both have these like cleansing capabilities. So that's the chiddush. And so far we've really just been trying to get our hands around like what role does salt play within the sacrifice. But That's all kind of by way of background to then, all right, we now have the opportunity to not, unfortunately, not bring sacrifices, but to be people who dream of the redemption and dream of the redemptive time, and therefore keep like pieces of this alive in our own ritual, in our own ritual lives. So how do we do that? I think the salt is that a really great, we'll see in a moment, that salt is a really great example of this kind of almost detail from temple times that then gets brought into our own ritual lives in a very concrete way. Because, right, if I, you know, there's so many details that we need in these portions that it's very hard. I mean, you know that maybe prayer was, right, tefillot kedagan korbanot, tefillin, like, okay, maybe I pray at times when sacrifices were said, or when I say musaf, I read through the sacrifices that would have been brought on this special day as part of the musaf offering. And maybe even every morning I read through the korban tamid of that day. All of that's amazing, but I think, you know, very few like ritual elements of our lives actually are trying to like recreate these korbanot. And sometimes we're very anxious about it, right? Like we're anxious about getting too close to recreating things. Many of us don't eat lamb at the Seder because we're like, no, we're not bringing a Pesach offering. This is not a Pesach offering. We don't eat lamb at the Seder. And the halacha is we're not allowed to point at food that we're eating from meat that we're eating from Pesach and say, this is for Pesach, because that would then be a promise of this animal I'm gonna bring to the, you know, to the Beit HaMikdash as my Pesach offering. And we're very anxious about that, you know, especially this time of year. So in a lot of times we're actually anxious about making ritual elements of the sacrifices into like practices that we do. So we're comfortable kind of turning them into prayer, but in terms of like actions that we do in our own homes and our own lives, there's not very many of them, but salt is one of them. So let's take a look at the salt. So here's Rabbi Huda. This is just a little introduction to the next part. We have a statement by Rabbi Huda. He says, "Shlosha dvarim ha-ma'arich v'hen ma'arichin yamav u'shnotav shel adam." Three things that someone who prolongs them, who does them for a long time, or does a lot of them, or something like that, his days and years will be like prolonged in due course. So what are they? Hamarich betulato, hamarich al shulchano, vehamarich lebeda kisei. One who prays a long time, one who spends a long time at the table, and one who spends a long time in the bathroom. So we're not going to look at all of those options. We're just going to zoom in on the ma'arich al shulchano, someone who spends a long time at the table. So why? What's the benefit of spending a long time at the table? You might have thought, eat your meal, go back to learning Torah. Why? Like, no, of course you shouldn't spend a long time at the table. Like, don't dilly-dally while eating. You have a lot of other stuff to do with your lives. You know, get on with it. But Gemara says, ma'arich al shulchano, Dilma ate anya v'yahivlei. You should spend a lot of time at the table, because then maybe a poor person will come and you'll have the opportunity to give him food. Dichtiv v'hamizbeach eats shalosh amo gavoha. So this is Ezekiel's description of the size of the altar. The altar was 3 cubits high. And Ezekiel, who, remember, we love talking about Ezekiel because Ezekiel is not speaking, he's speaking from the Gola, he is speaking from the exile, right? So he's not speaking as a person who's actively engaged in bringing bringing sacrifices to the temple, and yet he has this, you know, glorious vision of the temple and in extraordinary detail, right? We just saw, you know, the altar is 3 cubits high, and here in the English they bring the whole verse, right? And the length is 2 cubits, and it was of wood, and the corners and length and walls all of wood, right? So but that's amazing that Yechezkel has that, that Ezekiel has that vision, because Ezekiel is not sitting there describing it something he's seeing with his own eyes in the flesh. He's sitting in Bavel and having this kind of and having this vision of it. But what is relevant is patach b'mizbeach v'siyim b'shulchan. that Ezekiel starts out by mentioning the altar and finishes by mentioning the table. And then Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar, the Amrei Tavai, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar both said, Kol zman shebeit hamikdash kayam, mizbeach mechaper al Yisrael. The whole time that the temple was standing, the altar was the site of atonement for Israel. V'achshav, and now, shulchano shel adam mechaper alav. Now our tables, our dining room tables, are where we achieve atonement. So where once upon a time, we brought sacrifices with salt, and that helped us to achieve atonement. Now, our tables, our dining room tables, are where we have that possibility. So that is like very ripe. Like, what does that mean? Shulchano shel adam mechaper alav. That's a real like challenge to bring into our own lives. But the Shulchan Aruch really concretizes it. So the Shulchan Aruch says, you shouldn't bring bread until you have some condiment, to dip, salt, either salt or some condiment to dip the pieces of bread into. But if he's not, right, the Shulchan Aruch here is not saying anything particularly exciting. He's saying, like, don't make your bracha on the bread until you're ready to eat the bread. And so if you're not going to eat this bread without salt or a condiment, wait until you have salt or a condiment before you make the bracha and start eating your bread. But if your bread is made out of high quality flour, or if the bread is seasoned already, or if he's just going to eat it plain, then he obviously does not need to wait for salt or a condiment. But, says the Ramah, however, says the Ramah, it is a mitzvah, it is a good practice. This is not a great translation here. I would translate mitzvah here. Mitzvah is a complicated term, because sometimes it means it is a commandment and you must do it, and sometimes it means it's a good thing to do. And I feel that here it means it is a good thing to do, and that this translation is inaccurate, but I'm open to hearing your thoughts on that later. The Ramah says, it's a good thing to put salt on every table before you break bread. Because your dining room table is similar to the altar. And eating is like the sacrifice. So that's amazing, right? Because until now we thought, maybe it's about, right, in the Gemara it seems like it's about a poor person could come by and you would have the opportunity to give, to share of your food with that person, and that's a great mitzvah, and that maybe achieves you kapara, right? That kind of seemed like what was going on in the Gemara we had just looked at. But here, the Ramah here is saying, no, actually, just like you eating at home on your table, that's like eating a sacrifice. The Ne'amar, and it says, "Al korban achata kriv melach." You should, with all your sacrifices, you should offer salt. Why? V'hu magid min ha'praniyot, and this protects us from suffering. This protects us from tragedies. So it's again this connection that we saw in that first Gemara, in that Rish Lakish Gemara, about between salt and suffering, that they kind of can serve these two. That salt and suffering are kind of like an either or situation. Then they can both serve the same like transformative effect. So instead of suffering, choose salt and have salt at every meal. Says the Ramah here, because salt, because when you're eating, it's like you're eating a korban, and on every sacrifice that you would be salted. And what does the salt do? It is my game mino carnio, and it protects us from tragedy. So there's really like a lot going on here with this salt. And the Mishnah Berurah really brings in the Gemara we looked at. Kamo shemru chazal, bezman shebeit hamikdash kayam, hamizbeach mechaper adam, achshav shulchano shel adam mechaper alav, and added in. So all right, so what that means is in the times that the temple stood, the altar would atone for people, and now the people's tables atone for them. But gets added into the Mishnah Berurah, not where the Ramah took this in terms of protection and some of that, but actually the original interpretation of the Gemara, or like the original statement of the Gemara, which is how does your table help you get atonement, is that you give from your table to the poor. Okay, so this, I think we're gonna skip this Gemara. This is just the source for the like fancy bread doesn't require weeding. But on this Gemara, the reason why I have this here is just to line up the tofu that's on this Gemara. But on this Gemara that says that basically has the content of what we brought in of what we saw in the Shulchan Aruch of, you know, bread that you don't need to put salt onto, you don't need to add salt to bread that is already delicious on its own without salt or a condiment. So the Tosafot here say, we are French and our bread is delicious. That's more or less the translation there. We don't eat our bread with condiments or with salt because our bread is already very good. And it's like what it says in the Gemara here, and so therefore you don't need to wait. You don't need to wait for a condiment before you break bread. However, you have a teaching of Rabbi Menachem, or you have a practice of Rabbi Menachem. Where Rabbi Menachem was very careful to always have salt on the table. As it says in the Midrash, when the Jews are sitting around and they're waiting for the next person to wash, what's happening, right? Like, we all know this situation from our own home on like a Friday night, right? Waiting for the next person to wash, and you're literally just sitting there, right? And you're not allowed to do anything, because if you do anything, that'll constitute a break between washing and eating bread. But what's the problem with that break? That break is a very dangerous break, because it's a break also from any mitzvah. So you can't do a mitzvah, because that'll be a break between two mitzvot that need to be connected to each other. And on the other hand, when you're without mitzvot, that makes you vulnerable. Bad things can happen to you when you're not doing mitzvot. What are you vulnerable to? Hasatan mekat regalihem. The Satan is accusing them of doing nothing, or Satan is just accusing them of like normal things, but they're not like kind of defending themselves by doing mitzvot. Brit melach, says the Tosfot, what is the covenant of salt? The covenant of salt protects them from the Satan. This is the iteration of the covenant of salt that in some ways I would love to really like, I'm going to try and wrap up in the next couple of minutes, because I'd love to really hear your thoughts on like, what do you think this Brit Melach, this covenant of salt is? It seems like every person who has mentioned it interprets it in a massively different way. But here it seems the covenant of salt protects them. So the way I can make the most sense of this is that the same way that we sort of saw in that statement by Rish Lakish, that it's either salt or suffering. One or the other is going to bring about the that like transformative power to transform sin to atonement. That salt and suffering both have that power. That if you go the salt direction, then you are spared the suffering direction. So I think that's, in a way, that's salt protecting us. That's salt protecting us from suffering. And that when you brought some other symbol of transformation into your life, then you don't need suffering as a kind of transformative force in your life. And that's what the salt does at the table. That the Satan is up there saying, oh, they're good for nothing. They sin all the time. But with the salt there as a symbol protecting us, reminding us that everything can be changed from not delicious to delicious. This transformative power exists in the world, and that reminder, that symbol on our table protects us in this moment when we are when we're vulnerable because we're not doing it. Okay. I want to dig in now just a little bit more deeply to this idea that our tables are just like this place where we do sacrifice, which is really like, that's the most straightforward reading of the Ramah, where you're just like, yeah, when you eat on your table, ha'achila ke'korban, eating is like offering a sacrifice. So I want to just dig into this, like our tables are these sacrificial places for a moment, and then we'll conclude. So we have a Mishnah and Avot where we talk about what needs to happen at your table. So Rabbi Shimon Omer, Shlosha she'achlu al shulchan achad, v'lo amru alav divrei Torah, kiilu achlu mizivchei mitzvah. So again, oh here, I'll translate and then I'll say what I'm about to say. Rabbi Shimon says, three people eat together on one table and they don't say Torah at the table. It's as if they brought offerings of the dead. It's as if they're idolaters. Offer it, right? So this table has this like sacrificial capability. And if you do it right, then it's as if you brought a sacrifice. And doing it right means saying Divrei Torah. And if you do it wrong, it's as if you're an idolater. And then, right, because, and if you do it, that's if you did it wrong, then you're an idolater. Aval shlusha she'achlu al shulchan echad, v'amru alav Divrei Torah, three people eat on one table, and they do say Torah amongst them, ki'ilu achlu mishulchano shel makom baruch hu. It's as if you are eating at the table of God. And this is, by the way, this same verse from Yechezkel that we saw before, v'deber elai zeh ha'shulchan asher lifnei Hashem. This is the table that is before God. And again, Yechezkel, who is our prophet of the Gola, prophet of the exile, who still has this like close connection to the temple. And so too, when we eat, we can remember Yechezkel and have the same close connection to the temple. And one of the ways to do that is not just by putting salt on the table, that's what we started with, but also by, yes, learning Torah at our table. And then I'll just finish with a little bit of Pesach, since that's what we're coming up to. So Pesach, obviously, our whole Pesach Seder is a recreation of what should be the centerpiece of our Pesach Seder is eating the Korban Pesach, and that's what we're about to see, right? So they bring, the Mishnah describes, they bring out all of the Seder plate and the matzah and all the accoutrements, and you bring out the Charoset, even if it's not a mitzvah, it's just a custom. Rabbi Eliezer ben Tzadok Omer mitzvah, Rabbi Eliezer says, no, Charoset's yes a mitzvah, okay, not important. Mikdash hayu mevi'im lefanav gufo shel Pesach. And in the period of the temple, this is when they would bring out the body of the Korban Pesach, the body of the Pesach lamb. And here we have, what are these two cooked foods? What are these two, like, maybe side dishes that you're supposed to bring out in addition to the Korban Pesach? Rav Huna says, Silka Varuza, he says beets and rice. Chizkiah says a few dag beitza, even just a fish and the egg that's fried with it. Beitza shalav. Rav Yosef says tzarich shnei minei basar. Rav Yosef says you should bring out two kinds of meat. Echad zecher lePesach veEchad zecher lChagiga. One in remembrance of the Pesach offering, and one in remembrance of the festival offering. Now, here's what's important about that. I mean, lots of things are important about that. But in the Mishnah, you have shnei tavshilin, you have two cooked things, and the Pesach. And so now we're no longer bringing out the Pesach, but we've repurposed these two cooked things to now be in commemoration of the temple. Right, one in commemoration of the Korban Pesach, one in commemoration of the Chagiga. And again, in temple times, you were still bringing out these two cooked things in addition to the offerings themselves. But now we said, okay, we don't have the Korban Pesach anymore, but we're going to, on our table, commemorate this ritual, this sacrifice with a ritual, which is the eating of these two, what might have formerly been, you know, side dishes. Like if you think of your Thanksgiving dinner, maybe like one was stuffing and, oh, I don't know, you guys are Canadians, I don't know whether you guys do this, but I'm American. And American Thanksgiving, you bring out, you know, like your cranberry sauce and your stuffing, or like your cornbread and your whatever. So that's what these two things were originally. And now they've transformed into being like the heart of the matter, commemoration of these two sacrifices. So just to kind of review where we've been and sum up, and then we'll I was told to leave some time for questions at the end, and I would very much like to do that. So I'm sure I don't have answers to your questions, but I'll just hear them and then whatever. Which is that in our, we saw that, we first saw just like where salt appears and how strange that verse is actually, that kind of says the same thing three times, and especially strange that there's a covenant surrounding the salt. And then we saw kind of, oh, like how does it, we looked in the Rambam and we saw, oh, how does the salt actually work in temple times? Where is it kept? How is it applied to everything? What if you salted generously? What if you didn't salt generously? What if you didn't salt at all? And there's something weird about the salt that for most sacrifices other than meal offerings, if you didn't salt at all, so you did the wrong thing and you get lashes, but the offering still works, which is very weird in the context of temple ritual. And then we saw how the salt kind of gets transformed. So we saw Reish Lakish starting to say that the salt, so we saw before we got to Reish Lakish, we saw that the salt, one of the things that the salt does is he makes the korban delicious. And that's a really important thing, because the korban is supposed to, when we bring a sacrifice in the temple, it's meant to like do something to us. It's meant to have this transformative effect on us. And that if we didn't salt it, then we wouldn't be like treating the sacrifice as if it were like this delicious thing that we actually really would have wanted and would have wanted to enjoy. So the salt like plays this crucial role in the transformative capability of a sacrifice. And then we saw this Gemara where Reish Lakish compares salt to suffering and almost lays it out as if there's like potentially two ways to get from being sinful to atoned, and one is through sacrifice and through salt that makes food delicious and plays this transformative, symbolically transformative role within the sacrifice, and one is through suffering, and that's another way of achieving atonement in the like non-sacrificial mode. And then we saw kind of as we kept going that salt continued to sort of play this like stand-in in our own tables. As our table becomes an altar, the salt becomes this either like the symbol of the possibility of transformation or this transformative mineral that we bring into our lives in all these different kind of food contexts to remind us of our own abilities to transform and to do teshuva and to reach atonement. And then we saw that can play, you know, a role in our tables in all these different ways, but that also then our tables have these kind of sacrificial capabilities, even more broadly speaking, beyond the salt. So the salt is on our table, but then also on our table, we have the ability to offer sacrifices through the Torah that we share on our table. And also on our tables, we have the opportunity to do rituals that are zichar mikdash, like when we have the zroah and the beitza on our seder plate, we have our two cooked items on our seder plate, and those remind us of the Korban Pesach and of the Korban Chagiga that would have been brought. And that our tables really have the ability to be reminders of the altar. And Ezekiel, our prophet of the Gola, our prophet of who himself didn't have access to sacrifice, is the one who we call on to make that connection between our tables and the altar in this really beautiful way. So my blessing to you this Pesach and going forward is that you carry with seriousness the sacrificial potential of your table and the transformation that sacrifice once could have brought, as symbolized by the salt on our tables and added to our challah, even though we don't need it in our challah, right? That's important. Like the challah, you can make a bracha on the challah even without any kind of condiment, because our challah is delicious without it, but we add salt as a reminder of the temple and as a reminder of the transformative capability of the temple and the transformative capability within ourselves to do atonement and to change and to grow. And with that, I will stop and I'll probably share and I will probably take questions. It's been a real privilege to learn with you all tonight. And thanks for having me.
Does anybody have any questions they want to ask? There's one question really in the chat box. I think the one of the Rambam can trace his oral traditions back. I guess that's going back to the early Rambam and say the Rambam doesn't have Mipi HaKabbalah or Lomadnu.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like we assume so. And sometimes when the Rambam says that, also, like, you know, I mean, right, it really depends, like, place by place, where, what kind of oral tradition the Rambam is talking about. I can't tell you here exactly what he means by it. I can look into it. I don't even know your name, though, so I don't know how successful I'll be at finding you, Mr. iPad.
Some people like to be anonymous, you know, so it's okay.
Fair enough, but those people don't get followed, I guess.
I'll throw out one idea, if I may.
Please.
You know, I guess Saul goes back to Lot and Stone. And Melech Stomit, you know, we wash my machronim to wipe off the Melech, you know, Stomit. So I think you want to talk about salt as atonement and transformation in a certain sense, like it's a tikkun for the, you know, stone, which was very unwelcoming, the opposite of the shulchan that you were describing. And therefore, you know, that's the one type, and we have to get rid of the Melech, you know, Stomit. And then, so the Torah picks up, and of course, you know, picks up on that theme through the corner, because it is a little weird. Like, who cares?
You know,
like,
what the other place in the Torah is? Let's see whether you have your daughter's Tanakh capabilities. Do you know what the other place in the Torah that salt appears in? There's only really like two times by sacrifices. One time, Eshet Lot. What's the fourth?
You're asking me now. You're testing me. When's the other time in Tanakh Lot salt?
Oh, non-Tanakh, just the Torah. Just the Torah. Sorry, just the Torah.
Give me half a second. Let me. I'm not so good. I'm not like Rav Herzog, who go through the entire Talmud. You know the story. I spent story how Nechama Leibowitz once asked Rav Herzog a question. And Rav Herzog, first like chief rabbi of Israel, went like this. But Babli Zalonimsa.
That's amazing. Yeah, I love
Talmud. Where else in the Chumash do you have salt? I don't know. Somebody's got to help me out here.
So it's in Parshat Nitzavim, Gafri Bamelach, Sori Farlata.
It's the same idea. It's the same idea.
Right, exactly. It's the same idea. Well, it's the Eshet Lot idea. It's the salt as Yisurin idea.
And of course, that ties into Pesach, if you want to add that extra layer, because as Rashi quotes right away, Lot served the matzah because it was Pesach, and you know, there's a whole piece on that. Jonathan Sachs has a whole beautiful piece on that, Lot. And you know, the language is Bayit Mamad, the delay, and matzah. So there's a lot of comparisons between the story of Lot and Storm and matzah, but that's
absolutely
That's for another shear. Okay, anybody else have any questions? Or is it 9:28? We can let you go. But okay, thank you very much. Of course, next week. Next week I'll probably give the parsha shear. Probably 11 o'clock in the morning. I hope you'll come. Whoever comes will come. And why not? I think we should do a shear every week, and if we can. And also next week, of course, on Sunday, Menachem Liebtag and Benny Gesundheit back to back on their shear on Pesach on Sunday. On Monday, Professor. Adam Cohen, art professor at the University of Toronto, will be giving a visual tour of the Haggadah. I mentioned he wrote the book. Some of you may have it. Very, very beautiful book put out by Korn last year on the art and the history of the Haggadah. So he'll be speaking Monday to the Shear, making his debut on at least on Torah Motion Online. And Tuesday, Benny Gesundheit will still have his Tehillim Shear. On Wednesday, Moshe Sokolov will have his Torah Shear. So we'll have Shear every day next week. And so even as we do this week, and okay, everybody be well. Thank you, Leah. It's a pleasure. And you should have a Chag HaShem V'Sameach in Philadelphia.
All of you as well.
Okay, and everybody should be well. And Laila Tov and Shabbat Shalom, everybody.
All good.
Shabbat Shalom.